The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Welcome back to the Squawker Talk Up podcast. I'm your host, Greg Johnson. And joining me today from goal.com is Nizar Kinsella, back again on the podcast.
Yes, thanks for having me on. Oh, always love it.
Thanks for coming back on. Yeah. And another returning guest, Carl Anker, freelance culture, football, sport writer. You kind of cover a bit of everything, don't you?
I write words for money. Put the hungry into hungry young journalists.
The subjects, they do not matter. He will cover them all. But one thing we're going to be covering in this podcast, well, there's a few things, because it's been an absolutely hectic week of football. And we've got a big weekend ahead of us as well. Obviously, we've got the Champions League, which wrapped up the quarterfinal stages. The Europa League as well. Got a massive weekend in the FA Cup. El Clasico is happening in Spain. And there's also that little bit of a Premier League business to attend to for the teams that haven't been lucky enough to stay in the oldest cup competition in the history of organised football. But we'll get to that a little bit later on. Let's just wrap up the Champions League. It's another dramatic week of fixtures. I'd probably say the headline match was a Barcelona 0, Juventus 0. Juventus going through 3-0 on aggregate. Juventus has still only conceded 2 goals in Champions League this season. They kept out Messi, Suarez, Neymar, kept them quiet for 120 minutes. So what did you make of their performance, Carl?
Everyone think they're a gangster until a real gangster walks in the room. I think it was really interesting that Barcelona, you know, you got the same speech from Barcelona, we'll bring you back home and we might score 3 goals because we've got 3 generational talents up front. And then Juve just went, absolutely not. Absolutely not. I think what was really, really interesting from this tie was just how ordinary Barcelona were made to look and how this was different from when Bayern dismantled them. This was the Bayern one was just, we're fitter, stronger.
That was like a clash of titans, wasn't it?
Yeah, whereas this was young lion versus old lion. And it really seemed like there's some major surgery that needs to be done at Barcelona. That said, Messi still got it, which was amazing.
And in the first leg, it wasn't Messi's fault. It was more Suarez didn't put away that beautiful pass he sent through as well. Messi did what he could.
This is true. I think Neymar used up all of his sauce in the PSG game, and Suarez has been quite ineffectual in this Champions League campaign. It was the most entertaining 0-0 I've seen in a long, long time.
So one thing on Neymar though, and we say he used up all his sauce in the second leg against Juventus, he tried to do it all over again like he did against PSG. I think he attempted 20 take-ons, completed 13 of them. That's more than some players managing, a whole month's worth of a season. So that's very, very impressive. But what do you think were the key ingredients of Allegri's success away at the Camp Nou? Because we saw what PSG did. They won 4-0 at home, and then they went to Barcelona and got spanked 6-1. What did Juventus get right that PSG got so wrong?
Well, they were tactically flexible. They controlled the game. They defended quite deep, and they had players who were either willing to put in the work rate going the other way, or have the pace to stretch Barcelona. Cuadrado was quite an important part of that formula. A player that Chelsea lost, and he showed his quality really. And it was just such a controlled performance, winning your individual duels. It was easy. The areas that Neymar was operating in to get those take-ons were pretty ineffectual. He's nowhere near.
It's almost like when he got to that buffer zone, they just stopped him. He was you can do all your fancy stuff there, but as soon as you get into the kind of final third, no.
Half-court man-to-man defence, to use the basketball term.
But speaking of basketball terms, I don't want to blow my own trumpet here, but I wrote a piece before the match on Mario Mandzukic calling the glue guy of Juventus' front line. I mean, this is a striker that you struggle to fit in at Atletico. He's a hard-working guy, but he's playing on the left wing for Allegri in this setup to get both Higuain and Dybala in there.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a great team performance by Juventus.
It reminds me of Dirk Kuyt's performances with Liverpool. Just slotting yourself in a position you're not particularly comfortable with, but applying yourself brilliantly, infinitely well, and Barcelona ultimately ended up being like Man United, throwing a big man on up front.
Yeah,
putting Gerard Piqué. It's no different to what United do with Fellaini and get absolutely slammed for. So why not?
Mm-hmm. And they did the same against Inter, didn't they, in 2010 when they
yeah,
and
it worked. It
has worked before, but you know, if you're going to slam other teams for going down that route, then Barcelona certainly, you know, they're not always glorious and beautiful. They sometimes go a bit nasty and
they're just another football club.
They're just another team.
They used to be like, I know the whole branding were more than a club, but take out away that all that when they were at their peak, they used to be like. There was something else about them, and that's been lost, that kind of aura, that kind of sense that they can go above and beyond what other teams are even capable of. What would you think's happened?
I wouldn't say it's been lost. I mean, we just saw them blitz PSG. Mm. They can do it. They, like I've said, they've got three generational talents up front, MSN. But behind that, you know, Rakitic is... He's all right. He's good at shuttling the ball, but he's no Xavi. Yeah, Iniesta's old, Busquets is old, and this I think this is very first.
For the first time ever, I mean, usually these are players that are so technically good that it doesn't matter how quick or strong they are. Mm. They just look on it. They look sharp. But they look tired. They looked off the pace against Juventus. I mean, we're going to come on to it a little bit more on the El Clasico, but how did Barcelona rebuild this midfield?
They don't have great depth in the squad. If you look at the bench, they had Elena on the bench, a young lad who might become a great player, but you know, maybe not ready for that level of competition against Juve. Mm. But also, I think that Barcelona are moving away from the La Masia small technical players, and now they're increasingly just becoming like the others, like with big, strong players. Some of the signings they're bringing in are the typical athletes that you see in the rest of the big
clubs. that's the big shame of Andre Gomes. You can almost see what Luis Enrique was going for by getting him in, but it just hasn't worked yet. But we'll get on to Barcelona a little bit more later when we talk about the El Clasico. But moving on to, the El Clasico. I've done that horrendous flaw, haven't I? Sorry, El Clasico, not the. I'm sorry. Apologies, listeners.
You need to brush up on your Spanish.
I really do, don't I? Moving now to France, where Monaco won 3-1 against Borussia Dortmund in a thrilling 6-3 tie, which sent the French side through. Kylian Mbappe, I mean, what more can we say about him? Youngest player now to score in both legs of a Champions League semi-final, aged 18 years and 120 days old. Incredible. First player in the history of the game to score in his first four Champions League knockout games as well. Muzrock Wong on Twitter said he's as good a player he's seen as when the original Brazilian Ronaldo came through. Already a phenomenon. I can't say that word either.
Phenomenon.
You know what I'm trying to say. You know what I'm trying to say. How good is he, Carl?
He is... he reminds me of PSV Ronaldo. So he's quite slight. So he looks like Ronaldo before Ronaldo put on all the weight and his knees eventually gave out. Because while he's quite slight, Mbappe hits top speed so quickly that when he does collide with the defender, he can just shrug him off. Yeah. And that's not because he's really big or strong, but it's because he's moving at hyper motion. Mm. And that's why I think you've got the original Ronaldo comparisons. He looks like Ronaldo at PSV. He looks like when Ronaldo went on that massive tear at Barcelona and won the Winners' Cup. Mm. I hope, it's a bit like Sané. Sané hits top speed at a remarkable pace as well. That their acceleration is really, really good. And you really hope that, one, they don't have an injury, or two, they don't get lectured that they have to get bigger to cut it in the big leagues.
Which two things kind of coincide, don't they? People put on muscle mass, it doesn't fit their body frame, and then injuries happen.
This is what happened to Daniel. I think this is the big problem that happened to Daniel Sturridge. Daniel Sturridge is way too big for his frame. And he used to be an electric pace, whereas now he's got the quickness of thought, but every now and again he doesn't quite come off, and his hamstrings tear. This is quite a common thing with English players, and I think Mbappe, like, one, stay at Monaco for as long as possible, and two, just keep doing you and tear up players. Yeah. A bit unfair that Dortmund had to play the first leg after that horrendous attack, but it was a great, great tie.
I mean, that will be one big caveat, big asterisk on the game for ever long. And you know, there is still a lot of controversy over what UEFA expected, demanded, asked of Dortmund, whether they did ask. It's since come out that the actual attacker, it looks like him, is somebody attacking the team, having put some put shares on the German exchange to make some money out of their share price dropping. Very weird.
Very,
very strange.
Very unusual.
But to go back to the football, Mbappe is obviously the leading light of this Monaco side. But now, so we've got Thomas Lemar, Benjamin Mendy, Bernardo Silva, Radamel Falcao, who looks like the player that Man United and Chelsea thought they were getting, Kamal Glick, Timo Bakayoko. Fabinho wasn't even in the game against Dortmund. A lot of people thought they'd miss him because he is kind of like the brains and a bit of everything in the middle for them. But this looks like a special side. Like, we talk about in the past, like, when Ajax won the Champions League under Louis van Gaal, you look back now and that looks like a who's who of great players that are going to go and do great things in the game. You look at his Monaco side, it's got a similar kind of shape, doesn't it?
Yeah, they'll probably be remembered forever, just for their achievements they've already put into the Champions League so far. I think that a lot of people will want them to win the Champions League. Certainly they want them to win the French League. There's so much more romance in the Monaco side than the PSG side.
Mm. Yeah, different billionaire.
Who's
it's just important that we kind of put this romantic sheen on a side that are also probably got less fans. They're from a tax haven principality, and yet they're the good guys, aren't they?
gives them a slight advantage when signing players. But they have changed their model. They're all about sell-ons, so they're buying the young lads with the prospect of selling them on. I think Falcao's the last of the sort of experienced players, but they're getting a lot out of him, and he's one of the best paid players in Europe as well.
Yeah.
And he's not paying tax on his earnings, so he's loving life and scoring goals in the Champions League. It's an amazing team. Thomas Lemar, he's got a great head on him, picks out really good balls. I actually like him more than Bernardo Silva. I think he might go on to a sensational career, and obviously this means great things for the France national team as well in the future.
They've got an embarrassment of depth, haven't they?
Yeah, I mean, England certainly envy them, and I think pretty much anyone else does as well.
Yeah, I think Lamar's got the most assists in the Champions League knockout stages this season, so he's been finding those killer balls 100%. Speaking of players who have been scoring goals, we've got to mention Cristiano Ronaldo. He scored 5 of Real Madrid's 6 goals across both ties against Bayern Munich, who actually were almost heroic in how they came back at the Bernabeu. They got beaten 2-1 at the Allianz Arena, brought it back to 2-1 at the Bernabeu, but then they got beaten 4-2 in the end on the night. Ronaldo getting a hat-trick, also getting his 100th Champions League goal. Is the Ballon d'Or going to maybe be in his clutches again this year? Messi's out of the Champions League. He's behind him in the La Liga race. We're going to get onto El Clasico again later. But these are kind of the points that these awards spin on these days, isn't it? It's about what you win as well as how good you are. Yeah. Does he have the advantage over Messi now? And what would that mean?
The Champions League seems to be really important for the awards as well, particularly as a trophy. I mean, domestic honours maybe outside La Liga don't matter as much. I don't think, you know, if Chelsea win the double, I don't think Eden Hazard's still going to be a favourite, even though probably deserves to be up there. That sort of thing. So I think that, Ronaldo's clear favourite, but I think it's getting closer and closer than ever with the rest of the chasing pack. He is getting older, and some of the great talents are coming through. Griezmann, if they win the Champions League, he'll be sort of, 50-50 with Ronaldo to win it for me.
Yeah. I mean, if Monaco go all the way and Mbappe scores the goals to help them win the Champions League, I mean, could he do a Michael Owen, as I'm going to call it?
Right. Monaco aren't going all the way. let's put that down.
But if they get to the final?
You see, the Ballon d'Or is so much about a PR exercise that I don't think between now and when the voting happens, I don't think Mbappe can get the Twitter hashtag and the Nike endorsement deal and the advert space.
You're such a cynic, Carl.
I'm like, look, the Ronaldo Messi Ballon d'Or tussle is one of the most transformative spells you'll see in world football because it's changed from watching football on a whatever happens, the World Cup is the best thing important and team game is most important. Sometimes the defender can win it to basically show me how many goals you can score in the Champions League. And that's a big debate now in every single Ballon d'Or argument. And I think, the next generation, when Messi or Ronaldo stop, it will probably be Hazard versus Bale. And when they stop, maybe it will be Pogba versus Alaba. And then you'll get, I think someone, Rory Smith said Mbappe versus Rashford is going to be Ronaldo versus Messi for the Snapchat generation. This is cyclical. But I think for now, this is going to be Ronaldo's Ballon d'Or. And, all power to him. He's reinvented himself twice.
Bonucci deserves to be in the discussion, doesn't he? Do you not think?
Is he getting game time at Juve? Is he getting enough game time at Juve?
Well, when he's playing, he's doing great things.
This is true.
It was only because he fell out with Allegri, though.
Has he got the PR? He's Bonucci. Can you put Bonucci on an Adidas advert?
But while it is a PR battle, when we look at the Wikipedia pages of the future and look back at who's won what and how many times and when, I don't want to sound like a Messi fanboy here because I think Ronaldo is one of the greatest footballers of all time, but would it be a bit of an injustice if Ronaldo catches up to Messi or Ronaldo overtakes Messi through winning the Ballon d'Or in seasons like this, where Messi is actually having, individually, if you're going to view it on an individual basis, Messi's probably having a better season than Ronaldo for all-round performance. So would it be a historical injustice for Ronaldo to overtake him?
It's a tennis argument, isn't it? you know, everyone calls Roger Federer the greatest tennis player of all time, but you've got to bear in mind for a lot of Roger Federer's, the beginning of Roger Federer's career, the hardest player he had to play was Andy Roddick. And no disrespect, Andy Roddick, but you're not anywhere near the big four that is running amok on tennis right now. But no one really brings
that.
He's
no Sampras.
That's the thing. Like, it's all well and good to put asterisks on accolades and whatever, but if Ronaldo wins 5, maybe 6 Ballon d'Ors, where at the same time as the greatest player, arguably the greatest player of all time, Messi, then you give Ronaldo those accolades. Like, I think my big thing when I'm screaming about, oh, I mean, if Messi's one of the greatest players of all time, which I think we're all in agreement with now in world football, Messi's maybe top 5 of all time to ever play football, then Ronaldo's at least top 15, just by keeping pace with one of the top 5.
Oh yeah, no, I'd say more than that as well. I think Ronaldo, when Ronaldo came into Real Madrid, Real Madrid were suffering like Barca were now. They weren't the glorious team. It was a gentrification signing. It was basically something to bring back the Galacticos to Real Madrid, and it was a massive statement. And they turned it around, and now this Real Madrid team is it's almost stemmed from that signing of Cristiano. Obviously, Ramos has been there through thick and thin, but
they've got talisman everywhere, haven't they? They've got one in the dugout as well. Zinedine Zidane is the ultimate Galactico manager. He was the ultimate Galactico in the first wave of Galacticos, and now he's the Galactico manager making the Galacticos actually win stuff. Do you reckon he can go all the way and become the first manager to win back-to-back Champions League titles?
Yeah, I mean, they're by far the favourites to do that, but for some reason something always like stops that team from getting the back-to-back titles. I remember, you know, Man United had that chance, but they came up against that stunning Barca side, and it's just some reason there's some sort of voodoo curse on that that achievement happening.
It's often said that the best sides don't win these competitions outright. It's often the sides that can just make it happen. And Real Madrid, we talk about Barcelona not having depth. Like, Real Madrid have kind of gone the other way. They've got an embarrassment of riches on the bench. You've got guys like Kovacic who aren't playing, who are probably like the starting playmaker for a lot of other sides. Mm-hmm. They've got that amount of quality. But they're a side that by hook or by crook seem to make it happen when they need to. Is that what makes them a potential contender to win the Champions League when so many of the great, possibly greater sides haven't retained it?
Yeah, of course. I mean, they've got more money. They've got more players. They've got... Real Madrid are lucky and good is what Ringer, former Grantline writer and ESPN writer Mike Goodman said. Like, if you look at their stats, they play a lot like an early 2000 Premier League team. So they take a lot of shots inside and outside the box.
They love a cross.
They love crossing. They cross like 2001 Manchester United. They play comparative to some of the leading European lights. They play quite retrograde football, but they're doing it with some of the best players the world's ever seen. I mean, it's all right. Cross, you know, you can rely on free kicks to score goals when you've got Toni Kroos putting them in, you know? Mm-hmm. And worst come to worst, having Ronaldo up top, it's always a decent get out.
But when you say retrograde football, there is this thing of Zidane, oh, he's not really a tactician, he's not much of a manager. Why doesn't he get the credit he deserves? He's achieving great things at Real Madrid.
Well, I think he's just so new as well, so I think it's still a bit early to give credit. Real Madrid, you almost expect them to win things.
But if he wins, even if he doesn't win back-to-back Champions League titles, if he wins La Liga this season, and he's won the Champions League in his first season, we've got to stop calling it a fluke, haven't we?
He deserves the credit. And stepping up from the youth team seems to be quite a good model these days. And, something the Premier League teams won't do, but massive teams in Spain are doing it. And maybe that's something we could look at in this country. But yeah, he's obviously had a ground in the club, knows the club through and through, knows how to work his way around for signings, and he's not even made that many signings since he came in either. Mm. Not spent.
He kind of inherited Casemiro, the best squad in world football, didn't he? So he's just kind of me keeping them happy. One player who wasn't very happy, actually a whole squad of players who weren't very happy, were the Bayern Munich side. Arturo Vidal in the first leg. I mean, he kind of did 90% everything you'd want from a player in these kind of ties, and the 10% let everyone down. He missed a penalty in the first leg, which probably could have won the tie for Bayern Munich at that point. It completely changed the complexion of the match after that, and was sent off probably quite harshly in the second leg away against Real Madrid, and then basically Real took control. Frank Ribéry going on to Instagram later to basically accuse the referee of all sorts of things.
It's blatantly offside goals. Like, Ribéry, let the man vent. Let him have his Drogba 2009 moment.
Yeah, fair enough. We're moving on now to Leicester versus Atletico Madrid. And the Foxes, their fairy tale, whatever you want to call it, route for Europe is now over. Diego Simeone, however, showed a fair amount of respect to the Foxes. They're playing a centre-back Jose Jimenez in midfield. He made 23 defensive actions at the King Power Stadium. I mean, usually you talk about 6 or 7 defensive actions per game for a top-level player. That's ridiculous. That's absolutely ridiculous. That was the case against Sevilla. You know, many expected them to get absolutely pasted against Sampdoria's team. But the scorelines were really respectable against Atletico. Has English football become a bit bored, a bit condescending, a bit unserious towards Leicester? I mean, European sides are taking them seriously.
Yeah, well, Leicester might even become forgotten about, really, in terms of the narrative of football. It's, Champions League is so important to, you know, European competition. They won't be spending $30 million again without that boost up. And is there going to be another Ranieri sort of achievement like that again? Probably not. So, I think obviously, you know, if you're serious about winning the Champions League, this is why some Spanish teams, this is why Juventus get through to the later rounds, and Man City and teams like that don't, because they're not tactically flexible. They're trying to, you know, they're trying to impose their style of football on other teams. They're almost too confident. And then, you know, but you see, like, the teams that are doing the best in the Champions League, bar Monaco, really, they're flexible, and they see the opponents, and they find a solution.
Let's say it was an English side playing the Spanish equivalent of Leicester City. Do you reckon they would have been as ruthless and as kind of like cold blooded as Atletico were? Atletico weren't great, but they just basically were like, we're not gonna be arrogant about this. We're just gonna basically treat you like a team to beat and just beat you.
Well, the Spanish equivalent of Leicester City is Atletico Madrid.
Wow, it is.
No, we're talking. We know for a fact that Ranieri showed Leicester players Atletico Madrid videos before they embarked on that season. That was the model. The hard-working 4-4-2, instead of Odd Turan, you had, you know, to a degree.
Mark Albrighton.
Like, Leicester City are store brand Atletico Madrid, much like Manchester United are store brand Real Madrid. It's just how Atletico Madrid play. Like, Atletico Madrid's thing is, we're going to feel you out for 20 minutes, figure out what you don't like doing, and then make you do that for ages and ages and ages. And that was, like, I think it was a great, if you follow SB Nation Soccer tweeted out, Leicester City are at 58% possession. And they did a gif of Birdman doing a hand rub. And then 3 minutes later, Atletico Madrid scored. That's what Atletico Madrid do. they're slightly Floyd Mayweather-esque in how they find what you don't like doing, make you do it, and then just grind you down.
Yeah. That's a great comparison, actually, Floyd Mayweather. Yeah. I quite like that. I like that a lot. Yeah.
Knockouts, but points.
they're tactical smart boxing. Now I want you to each rank the remaining four sides from most dangerous to most beatable and pick out your favourites to win the whole damn thing. And the team, if you were in it, you'd want to draw in the semi-finals. I'm going to come to you first, Carl.
Again, Mike Goodman pointing this out, this is a really interesting semi-final draw because these are all teams that, to a degree, don't particularly like having the ball. They're all teams that quite enjoy playing counter-attacking football. But defense wins title, so Juve's my favorite. And after that, Atletico Madrid. Then after that, Real Madrid, because Atletico Madrid can't beat Real Madrid. And then behind that, it's Monaco. I think all the teams...
So if you were to be a team, you'd want to draw Monaco?
I'd want to draw Monaco. I want to be like, look, these guys can score goals, but I reckon I can shut them down. I reckon I can take a 3-2 at their paddock and then go beat them 3-0 at mine.
Wow. Naz, what about yourself?
I agree that Monaco are massive outsiders. I'd say absolutely huge outsiders. They just don't have that big game experience, and they're relying on that unpredictability factor to get through games.
They've been doing well so far out of it.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, well, so many teams achieve off that, but I think that now, like, the big managers will see it as an opportunity to sort of, you know, have a feather in their cap sort of thing and find a defensive solution, especially Allegri. I say Juve favourites, closely followed by Real Madrid, and then Atletico Madrid third. I still think they've got some sort of psychological block. It's like one of those teams, like the Dutch national team that failed in so many finals. I could see them being a bit like that in the Champions League.
Imagine if the draw went the way that you had a Madrid final again. Atletico lost.
That's what I want.
Again.
I want Madrid Atletico 3. I want the trilogy. Yeah.
I'm getting too emotional about it, though. Like, the last time I was like, I was supporting them more than any other team I supported in my life. I was just like, come on.
I want to do it. Come on. You know, we say they've got a mental block. Let's bear in mind, it took a last-minute equaliser and a penalty shootout for Real Madrid to do it twice. Yeah. Like, this hoodoo can be broken. Yeah. It can be.
Yeah,
if it doesn't happen, it'll be fantastic. It'll be the Buffalo Bills of Champions League football. For those who don't understand, the Buffalo Bills in the 90s in NFL lost 4 straight Super Bowls in a row, and they've never come close since. But yeah, I like Real Madrid being that we got to 3 Champions League finals, played Real Madrid every single time and lost. It's an amazing story.
That's also a painful hurt against your rivals, people you go to work with every day in the city. The locals will be suffering from
that. I'd like that. I'd like that to be a final, and I wouldn't mind either way which way that finishes. But also, I think this is Juve's year. I really think this is it.
It feels like that, doesn't it? I mean, we were talking earlier about their team, and I mean, you've got Dybala obviously up front, he's that little bit of magic, but Mandzukic, the workhorse down the left now. Yeah. Pjanic, he created an assist in the first leg. He was an absolute defensive like workhorse.
Yeah, he surprised me the most out of any other player in that game. But I think, yeah, going back quickly to the Ballon d'Or debate, Dybala will be right up there in it if Juve win it.
And as we were saying, in terms of defence, they've got Dani Alves at right back, Chiellini and Bonucci in the middle. You've got Sandro down left, who looks like probably he's up there with the best left backs in the world.
You've got to put it past Buffon, who is still the best goalkeeper in the world and has not won a Champions League yet. So,
and Kadira's in front of all that as well. It's tough. And as I say, a big shout out as well to Marcello, who, Ronaldo got the goals, but he was probably one of the best players of any position in any team.
Amazing.
That assist in this was ludicrous.
Absolutely incredible. I think he was just unplayable down the left for Real Madrid against Bayern Munich. So, one player that maybe doesn't always get the respect he's due, because he's a left back.
I don't think there's a footballer in the world that's having more fun than Marcello. Mm-hmm. Like, some players maybe have better goals or assists or passes or take on, but in terms of sheer fun per game, I think anyone enjoys the game of football more than Marcello. The only other person, maybe Dani Alves, then maybe David Luiz. Is it weird I've said 3 Brazilians? Yes.
Just looking at my phone, the draws have just been announced, actually, in the Champions League semi-final. It's not gone the way that we thought it would. It's Monaco versus Juventus, and that big old Madrid derby is going to take place in the semi-finals. Real Madrid hosting the first leg, Atletico Madrid at home in the second leg. Monaco will be away in the defining leg of their tie as well. What do we make of that?
That's a Real Juve final to me, and I think Juve's going to do it.
Really? Yeah. I think it's good news for Atletico Madrid, actually, because I think they'd hate to face Real in the final.
It takes a little bit of pressure off, doesn't it?
Yeah, it takes loads of pressure off, and, Simeone's a master of sort of those two-leg games, and I think that might work in the favour. See, it's actually a slight blessing in disguise for Atletico Madrid. Yeah.
Well, great opportunity for Mbappe to go up against Dybala in a little bit of a shootout there.
I think it's Mbappe versus Bonucci.
It's the test of his life already. Yeah. He'll remember that day.
Mbappe's rapid, Bonucci's less rapid.
And so, Falcao, we cannot understate the role that he plays. I think I did a little bit of piece the other day, looking at the hardest working match winners in Europe's top 5 leagues. Mbappe is way down there with Lukaku, and I think Zlatan wasn't very hard working either. But one of the most hard working and the most prolific for goals and assists was actually Falcao. He is put in an absolute shift for Monaco.
He'll be more important in that game because
he'll be elbowing the big boys out of the way to slip that pass through.
Exactly. What was the problem with Barcelona trying to break through that so-called impregnable defense was the fact that they had no variation in their attack. It was about beating players and take-ons and all that kind of stuff. But Falcao just is. His raw power. I think his power maybe waned a little bit, but still enough to.
So, having looked at that, we reckon it's going to be a Juventus versus Real Madrid final.
No, I go with Atletico. I'm going to change
it. Good man. Yeah. Good man.
Yeah.
Very interesting. We're going to move on now quickly to the Europa League before we get into all this lovely English action in the FA Cup, the Premier League, and then El Clasico, of course. Man United beat Anderlecht 2-1, but they had to leave it late with an extra time goal from Marcus Rashford to win the tie. Mkhitaryan and Rashford with the goals. Pogba with the pass to create the chance for the first, but United, as I say, had to take it to extra time. What happened, Carl? It should have been an easier win, shouldn't it?
It's this problem I've been talking about, that United are incredibly one-dimensional when Zlatan plays.
He was obviously taken off for injury. United beat Chelsea, playing a much more rapid, fluid front two of Lingard and Rashford in the Premier League. The injury looked horrible, so it kind of feels bad criticising the guy. He looked like he hyperextended his knee, could actually be out for the rest of the season. Going back to what you're saying, sorry for interrupting you, but is that a big loss for United? Or could this actually accelerate a process that's already started to take place in their attack?
It's both. I'm getting very much late era Ruud van Nistelrooy vibes from Zlatan right now where, yeah, it's great, but because everything has to go through him. I mean, you see this quite often in the United game, especially at home, where someone will take the ball from in the middle third, move it up forward. There's no real attacking system because we know for a fact Mourinho doesn't particularly trust, you know.
He sorts out the defence and he has to the attackers to figure out for themselves.
So you get where you get players going, well, I'll just hoof it back post to Zlatan and see what happens. And then, you know, it's a good get out. Like, Zlatan wins more of those back post balls than he has any right to. But at the same time, because it's such an easy, cozy comfort blanket, we're really, really repetitive in style. Like I said, United are playing like a store brand Real Madrid. It's just that Real Madrid are doing it with Toni Kroos instead of Ander Herrera and Cristiano Ronaldo up front instead of maybe Jesse Lingard. So that's why we're sixth in there. You know, we're sixth in a Europa League semi-final and they're first and going to go into a Champions League semi-final. That's the difference in talent when you play such retrograde football.
Dan Layden asks, if Zlatan's knee injury is as serious as it looked, could this be the last time we see him play for Man United?
Yeah, of course. His future's not been decided. It's not the best time to get a knee injury because you're going into contract negotiations as well. So,
and he was kind of being a bit clever, wasn't he? He was kind of lingering in the possibility of going to MLS as well.
Yeah, so it almost actually helps Man United in the negotiating table, but on the football pitch, it's going to be a big impact. But it depends how the other players step up. But it's a really massive case of Wayne Rooney and Anthony Martial need to support Rashford with the goals, because if it's just Rashford scoring the goals, United probably...
A whole other kind of one-dimensional.
Yeah. United will lose. United will lose in both either the semi-final or the final, and they will fail to get the top four, which is a tough running. I think they will increasingly focus on the Europa League, though, as the running sort of ticks down and the tough games, the
top
draws.
Ahead, it's way ahead of them now, isn't it? They can't get that.
It's, no point. They no can. Point. They can.
Go straight. No, all your eggs into the Europa League basket. As far as I'm concerned. All your eggs.
There's no better way of getting into Champions League than winning the Europa League, and Man United have never done it. So
and also, say we make a late put, I say we because I'm a Manchester United fan.
No.
I'm sorry. As you can tell by my accent. So say Manchester United make that push for the top four and they fail and they finish fifth or sixth and then they also fail in Europa League, then you're fifth and sixth. And what we know, if anything, the last three or four seasons have shown us, if you want to finish in the Champions League, you may as well just not be in the Europa League for a season. You may as well, to use another American sporting term, tank for a bit. So I wouldn't
I mean, look at Liverpool, look at Chelsea.
Yeah. If Mourinho is smart, if Mourinho is devilish in the way we know he is devilish, I'd pretty much be like, right, I'm gonna maybe play some of the youngsters. If it's a big game, I'm gonna play the big game. But I wouldn't. I think there's quite a few Manchester United fans who wouldn't be too annoyed if United ended up finishing eighth in the league and won the Europa League and then got into the Champions League that way.
Well, I mean, they're losing defenders at a rate of knots. Marcus Rojo could be out for the season as well.
Yeah.
I mean, Daley Blind actually did the pass before Fellaini's knockdown for Rashford to score. So he did.
Arsenal
going
fans
forward,
call
he
that
did
a pre-assist.
Absolutely. But I mean, Pogba did his little pre-assist with that free ball as well. So maybe United fans need to get on the pre-assist bandwagon as well. MUFC believer also asked, do United really need Zlatan Ibrahimovic next season? Just to cap this off, what do you reckon? Would you reckon United would be better off if they sign a guy like Griezmann? Running on those Pogba through balls, do they need a player like Zlatan?
They're still
Ibrahimovic?
A player short, though, aren't they? So I think they've always been a player short up front. I think they over relied on Rooney, and it's turned out that he's basically completely finished. It's such a sad thing to say because he's given so many great years for Man United and the Premier League, even England. He's done some good things for them. So
well, Roy Keane last night on the ITV highlights said it is the end of Wayne Rooney. But he said if he hasn't got the hunger to get back in, then he's over the football as well. And he will want to play a bit now that the options are opening up. But Mark Lovell has asked, like, what is going on with Rooney? Do you think that in the summer he'll be off to Everton, off to pastures new? What do you reckon?
I think this is it. I mean,
retirement fully, or?
I believe when Wayne Rooney does retire, be it this season or next season, that's it. You won't see him. He's going to move to Ireland and walk his dogs and he won't really do too much.
That's what Roy Keane did.
Yeah.
All right.
Fine. I know what I said.
I'm not sure he'd go to Ireland. He might go to Cheshire.
You go to Cheshire and you'll never see him. And you won't see him again until maybe 20 years later where there's another young 18-year-old kid playing for Everton scores again and they're going to wheel Rooney out going, he reminds us of young Wayne Rooney. But... What is there left for Wayne Rooney?
I disagree. I think he'll play for fun. He's always been a play for fun type of guy.
He has said he's going to retire from international football next summer, so he's still got that to hang on to. Oh,
yeah, God. Well, he needs to get into the squad first. Yeah. But I could see him going to someone like Celtic at a cut price. I think I could see him either, you know, it depends how much money's a motivation for him, because he will have those Chinese Super League offers because it's Wayne Rooney, simple as. Mm. But there'll also be like managers like Brendan Rodgers thinking, oh, I could tempt him to Scotland. He could play him in a deeper role and he could have him pinging balls around to...
If that's the present and the past, we're going to move on to the future of Marcus Rashford. Obviously, he scored the winner. He almost set up the best goal ever by doing a Rabona assist to a Pogba overhead kick. Didn't go in, sadly. We've had lots of questions about him because of his performance against Anderlecht and his performance against Chelsea. He looks like a player who's in as inspired form as he was when he broke into the scene last year under Louis van Gaal. But Leslie Wilson, Azam, asks, what does Marcus Rashford need to add to his game other than consistency to become the player he can be?
Game time. Simple as game time. Just give him more games.
He's played more minutes than any other teenager in the Premier League.
He's played him as a wide forward. He needs game time as a number nine.
Yeah.
And like number nines are a very special, precocious breed who, you know, when they're feeling it, they feel it. And if they're not, they're not. And right now he scored that goal against Sunderland. And now, look, he's got the sauce again.
Yeah.
A popular question from two people have asked me. Vikash Patel and Charlie Kassan ask, who will have the most successful career, Mbappe or Rashford? It's inevitable we're going to get asked this, but what do you reckon?
It's so tough to say at this stage, but yeah, Mbappe's younger, isn't he? So yeah, he's looking like the...
It's mad to think, oh, he's younger. Oh, Rashford's over the hill.
Yeah, he's over the hill. He's finished, man. It's almost impossible to say at this stage, but you know, I think that Rashford could be a one club man. He could get a great legacy at Man United and become a number nine for England. But will England destroy him? Maybe Mbappe will be more protected in France. There's more of a culture of not hammering their international stars, and you know, maybe a foreign move as well will aid that protection. So you've almost got to say, because Rashford's English, it's a disadvantage for his...
It says a lot that during that goal drought for Rashford, we were beginning to see news stories criticising how much money he was spending.
That's very
true. It was just beginning. Like the dog whistle had started.
It was starting.
And then it got put away very quickly by the fact he scored a goal for Sunderland. And that's the thing.
I was saying he should have started for England because, you know, when Defoe started and England won 1-0 in that World Cup qualifier, I think it was against Lithuania, I was like, that's a Rashford game. Defoe at the World Cup is not going to be the guy to sort of lead the line. Like, he's going to be a year older. He's going
to
get relegated.
But how old was Miroslav Klose when he won the World Cup with Germany?
Miroslav Klose was a generational talent.
That's the
difference. You've seen Jermaine Defoe, isn't
it? Jermaine Defoe is good.
I actually really like Defoe. In his prime, yes, England player, but not in his mid-30s. So I was a bit disappointed and put it out there, but everyone was like slating my opinions because he wasn't in good form and he was playing out wide for United and everything was going through Ibrahimovic.
Look at him now.
Also, this question, who's going to have a better career, Mbappe or Rashford? One, I don't have a time machine. And two, why do you want to know the answer already?
Yeah.
Like, come on, chill out.
Well, we need to know who to sign on Football Manager, Cole.
Both. You're playing Football Manager.
I don't have the budget.
You're playing Football Manager. Use Man United and then buy Mbappe. Come on, it's not that hard.
That's what Ed Woodward's going to be trying to do in the summer.
It's not that hard.
But on the question of young strikers coming through, we've had a Chelsea-related question. And as Goals Chelsea correspondent, as I thought this would be the perfect one to put to you. And we've seen the impact that Mbappe and Rashford have made as academy players who've come into the first team and been given the chance. Fapolo asks, the likes of Tammy Abraham, Dom Solanke, Izzy Brown at Chelsea, could Chelsea have these kind of players on their books? You just need to give them a chance in the first team.
Well, I'm well prepared for this question because I'm asked it so often. I do think Chelsea are preparing for, you know, using their loanees. They wanted to try and bring back Ake. They've used the not-so-young Victor Moses, and Nathaniel Shalabar came into the team this season.
Christensen's to come back next year as well.
Christensen almost certainly will come back. He's one of the best young defenders in Europe. Everyone I speak to just thinks, wow. So it is going to improve, and there is almost a shame within the club that not as many of their loanees have come through. But you've got to remember that it is a stockpiling method. It is a way around financial fair play. They make these players better on loan to sell them, half of them. So it kind of works both ways. Do you want success with experienced players, which is why Chelsea are top of the league? Because They've used the fewest players, 33. They've only changed the team 33 times this season, which is less than any other club. 22 different players. Most of them are old. There's only two under-21s have played this season for Chelsea.
No teenagers as well.
It depends if you want success trophies versus, you know, sort of that glamour and that sort of kudos of bringing a young player through. And, you know, I think Chelsea are one of those clubs that does just buy talent. They want Lukaku back and things like that. So there's kind of a tension between success and bringing youngsters through. And Chelsea have not really found the right balance yet. But
I think they've played the game better than anyone else. I think they saw what's going on. Like, right, we'll turn ourselves into a stockpile of young talent. If they're good enough, they'll come through. If they're not, then we're going to use a shopping plant. We're going to flip a brick. And look how much money they got for Patrick Bamford.
Yeah.
If Bamford worked out, great, amazing, we've got a great striker. Oh, it didn't. We've got double figure millions on a player who isn't that good.
Yeah. They're a 10th place team who's almost broke even in the transfer market with player sales to player purchases. And they're in a great position. They're in an enviable position.
One player that could be going in the summer, if rumours are to be believed, talking stockpile and talent and making a big return, Anthony Martial. What next for Anthony Martial? There's rumours that he's had a massive fallout with Mourinho, who hasn't been shy in being the media critical of the French forward for his attitude, his work rate, all the rest of it, saying he's not giving me things that I want to see, such as that Marcus Rashford does. Maybe that's tracking back. Maybe that's just having his mental fortitude. We don't know. But Kadeen Simmons has asked, where do you see Martial next season, Naz?
Well, I think he's going to be a really important player for United now in the final week of the season, so that's going to pretty much set the tone for his future.
In the same way that Ibrahimovic's injury could have ended his United career, could it almost be the silver lining Martial's been needing?
Well, yeah, and also it's Luke Shaw's in the exact same position and he's been having it in the last few weeks. Mm. But yeah, I hope he stays because obviously he's brilliant last season. And I picked him in goals, sort of young players to watch as the one who's going to shine the most this season. So shows what I know.
Got a bit of time left.
Yeah, a bit of time left. He's going to fire them to glory.
he's a great player. What's very weird is, from more or less the beginning of the Euros, his first touch has gone way.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's been personal problems off the pitch. Yeah. He's been messing around. I'm not trying to make excuses for the guy, but he apparently was setting up this whole branding exercise to rebuild his website and his social media profiles around being Man United's number 9. And then Zlatan arrived, and the club went, "Yeah, you're not having that number anymore." Yeah. So I think there's been other things at play that have unsettled
him.
He's
had a very turbulent. You know, he went to the Euros looking at like one of France's big young talents. He doesn't really play much minutes. He probably should have played in the final. And then, I mean, there's that.
We did. He got an 11-minute
cameo.
There's
that famous photograph of where he's putting on his t-shirt just as Adair scores for Portugal, and Deschamps is looking like an idiot. Mm. And Martial's doing the Martial face where he's just like, I can't be bothered with this. Yeah. And that's the thing.
Do you reckon that's what Mourinho's hating? The Martial face?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, as
the fact you call it the Martial face, that's
as
maybe
someone telling. As someone that had the Martial face. For a time.
He's got resting Martial face.
Martial looks like he can't be bothered. And I love it, because when he's good,
it makes him look cool, doesn't it?
It makes him look really, really cool. But when it's not happening, obviously, it annoys managers. And, you know, you can imagine Mourinho's yelling at Martial, and Martial's giving him that face where he's like, I can't be bothered.
I don't need this.
He might be, but he looks, he's lucky he's French, because one day we're going to describe him as a languid attacker.
He could end up like exactly the same as Memphis Depay.
And Mourinho has made those comparisons. He said that Memphis didn't grab his chances and Martial maybe.
I would not be surprised if Martial, I think Martial will be starting at United this time next season, but I wouldn't be surprised if it doesn't quite work out and he ends up going in January to another French club. Because also, like, the French football spar is rejuvenating a lot of young talent. It's great. It's a great league for young talent.
So. Nice need another project to bring back to the top.
That's a great shout. But I think it's not over for him yet. He's not binned off in the summer.
He's too good to bin off so quickly, isn't he?
Yeah.
But too expensive,
Going to quickly fly through the rest of the Europa League semi-finalists, because obviously that's wrapped up now as well. Ajax are through after a dramatic comeback in extra time against Schalke. It ended 3-2 to Schalke in Gelsenkirchen, but Ajax win the tie 3-4. Big match in the Netherlands at the weekend, PSV away, but I think the focus for Premier League fans remains on Schalke. David Borland asks, Saeed Kolasinac, if you're him and you're choosing your next club, ideally in the ideally in the Premier League. I mean, obviously, this is the left back who got two assists in the match against Ajax. Where do you go and buy? He's been heavily linked with Arsenal. As I say, he's got two assists last night. Nacho Monreal's only got two assists all season. What would you do if you were Kolasinac?
So that's, you're a left back. You're good at defending.
An attacking left back.
You're an attacking left back. You're good at defending. You want a manager that knows what he's doing. Mm. And you want to go to a Premier League club that doesn't really have a good left back. Go to Liverpool, mate.
Liverpool. Ooh. Yeah.
Millie can't do it forever. And Klopp is basically the nicest manager for young talent.
Mm. And he didn't bat an eyelid at getting a Matip from Schalke, did he?
That was one of the best free signings of the summer.
Also, no, like, really, stay at Schalke. Stay at Schalke. You don't have to come to the Premier League. This whole, like, oh my God, you're doing quite well, and I've seen you in Football Manager, and you've done a decent Europa League season. Yeah. Look, stay at your club, get your minutes. Do not go to England and play only 300 minutes of the season. Get game time.
I mean, if you go to Liverpool, he's going to be playing, isn't he?
I think he'll be playing at Arsenal as well. I think he will go to Arsenal and he'll get minutes, and the Nacho Monreal is below par and will probably get sold. They'll find a buy for him. He's not so far below par that they won't sell him. But
so far below par.
And the other sides in the semi-finals of the Europa League are Celta Vigo, reaching Europa League semi-finals for the first time in their history. I think it's the first time in their history they've reached a semi-final of any UEFA competition. They overcame Genk. And Lyon won on penalties against Besiktas.
What a shootout.
It was an incredible shootout. Lyon have scored 65 goals in league earned this season. They've scored 19, not including penalties, in six Europa League knockout games this season. Who should United fear the most in the semis, Naz?
Lyon. Yeah, definitely. They've got... And also, it's going to be a great story having Memphis back, isn't it?
Well, he's cup-tied.
Oh, is he cup-tied?
Yeah,
he'll still be on the sidelines. He was in a bar last night celebrating.
Yeah, that was brilliant. That. I've seen there's some videos knocking about. But I think Lyon, there's not much to fear, really. I think Ajax would be the perfect draw. I think they're going to have so much pressure on them in the league, and they're going to have to do that, you know, juggling act. I think that would be ideal. And Dutch team, it's such a surprise that a Dutch team's in the semi-final.
It's great.
As well.
It's really great. Dutch football's taking a bit of a battering recently. But whenever Ajax is doing well, it's good for European football, really.
It's an interesting title race in the Netherlands as well. Feyenoord are top. Ajax are in there.
Ascending.
PSV are third, I think.
Obviously, yeah, they're probably going to struggle, but they still mathematically can do it, yeah.
Weirdly, they're all on all conceded 21 goals, all three of the top three. So bit of a shootout for the top there. Moving on now to the FA Cup, the prestigious FA Cup, which we've been trailing all podcasts.
The world's
oldest cup competition, I'll have you know. Chelsea versus Tottenham is the first one on Saturday at the new Wembley.
Yeah, we'll both be there.
We will. I can't wait. Spurs have been brilliant at home, but as we've seen in Europe, poor at Wembley, not great on the road, well, not as good on the road. They might have beat Chelsea 2-0 at White Hart Lane, yet lost 2-1 at Stamford Bridge. Will the Wembley curse hit them again, Naz?
I think that fact has been overplayed a little bit. Spurs are generally in bad form at that point in the season, even in the league. And Chelsea are going through a bad patch now. And all teams have a bad patch, even as team as... There's such short memories in football that you forget that those are the sorts of things that write these records and all that kind of stuff. And Spurs' last Wembley win was against Chelsea as well, in that League Cup final. So... If you wanna look at the history,
good grief,
Juan de Ramos time.
Juan de Ramos is one achievement. So I think there's a small factor in there, but it's such a small factor. It's almost I don't know what you think.
I don't think it's a Wembley curse. I think it's the Chelsea hoodoo.
Yeah.
My dad is a Spurs fan, and I remember very, very. I think this might have been a Millennium Stadium FA Cup time, but I remember when it was the FA Cup semi final, came in. From football practice, Spurs are 3-0 up against Chelsea. Like, oh my God, you're 3-0 up against Chelsea, you're going through. My dad looked at me, Denny, I went, nah, we're not. It's not happening, mate. And then Chelsea, they drew 3-3, and then it was a replay, went to extra time, and that was it. As much like Atletico have a weird voodoo hex against beating Real, Spurs have a weird voodoo hex against beating Chelsea.
Yeah, but John Terry will retire having never lost to Spurs at Stamford Bridge, so he'll love that record. But but Chelsea have been a better team than Spurs for years and years and years, and this is the best Spurs team in my lifetime. So it makes all the difference that it's the best Spurs team in my lifetime, and it makes it an unbelievably good game. And Chelsea, I think Chelsea have some problems, serious problems.
Well, I was going to come to that because obviously they lost 2-0 at Old Trafford to Manchester United, a team that they thrashed earlier in the season. Chelsea beat Spurs in the League Cup final at Wembley in 2015. Is there anything Pochettino can take from United's 2-0 win? Any kind of insights he can take from Mourinho's tactics, get right and kind of copy to beat Chelsea at Wembley?
He could do, but I don't think he needs to copy Mourinho. Mourinho found his way of doing things and Pochettino will go about a different way. They've already beaten Chelsea at White Hart Lane and that was a more of a firefight, you know, two energetic, powerful teams coming up against each other. Spurs are probably more powerful than Chelsea, one of the few teams who are. They've got pace, they've got more energy, their players are flying, they're confident. They might just go, you know, they'll play with their three-man defence, just play the way they always do and just outplay Chelsea. That might be how they do it.
Expect to see maybe Zouma come in, because obviously the weakness on the right side with that, Cesar Azpilicueta is what, 5'10", and Dele Alli just towered over him for those headers. Do you reckon Zouma might come in?
I think Conte would rather have his typical 3-4-3. The problem with all Conte teams, which I've been looking into this week, is that he doesn't really rotate. He never, even
he's
at Juventus.
He's really bad at substitutes.
Yeah, he doesn't care about it. He'd rather play the same team week in, week out, and that's what makes it hard for young players to come out under him. And that's been the bedrock of his success. 13-game winning run was all about non-rotation, but what was Chelsea's strength is becoming their weakness now. And when Zouma comes in, he's not really ready. He's not match fit. He's not as confident as, you know, Gary Cahill even.
He's not soaked in the system, is he, like the other players?
No.
Soaked in the system. Yeah. I like that.
There we go.
But, I think if Conte's dream lineup would be the one we've seen in the 13-game winning run. The exact same team with Diego Costa in form. But
Matic or Fabregas?
99% of Chelsea fans would say Fabregas, but I'd probably go with Matic if I could play the rest of them. There's also a case he might go 3-5-2, which he's done a few times.
Or maybe 4-2-4. I mean, he's kind of getting to the point now where he's realising that people see the weaknesses of the 3-4-2-1 or 3-4-3.
Yeah, but like you said, I don't think they're soaked in the system. I don't think they're soaked in other systems. I think it's almost too much of a risk to go too far away from it. You've got to rely on your experience to take you over the line.
It was one loss against Manchester United, against Mourinho. Like, it was one loss in unique circumstances. Chelsea are deserved league leaguers.
Yeah.
And a lot of this is just based on Costa. Like, Costa is not on form right now.
It's huge.
And if Costa's in form, that means defenders have to occupy themselves with Costa and Hazard.
I think Costa's still been responsible for winning more points than anybody else in the Premier League this season.
Yeah.
Just in the first few weeks when he was just doing things that Chelsea couldn't. Like, yeah. And just putting those goals away.
This is what I thought, like, the big battle is going to be, is does Costa feel it and what's Wanyama going to do?
Yeah.
Like, Wanyama is low-key maybe the signing of the season. He's taken Spurs to that another level. He's added.
Well, how should Spurs line up though? Should they go with their 3-4-2-1 or should they go to this 4-2-3-1 they've returned to in recent weeks?
No, they should play the three at the back with Wanyama as the shield, and they should
go man for man.
Get your centre backs, get Toby and Vertonghen to double up on Costa, share the weight of just basically annoying that boy.
Yeah.
And just match him, because pound for pound, Spurs can beat Chelsea.
Fapelo is back with another question. And it kind of ties into, I mean, I was asking about Zouma before, and he asked, why is Azpilicueta so often overlooked? I mean, he wasn't in the PFA team of the year. He's probably not going to get, you know, many mentions for awards. Cahill and Luiz were picked ahead of him in the PFA team. Vertonghen and Aldevera had always rated ahead of him as well. Why does he not get the credit he's due?
Well, I think a lot of people have said that Cahill and Luiz were picked over him, but I reckon it might have been Walker who was picked over him. A lot of people still see him as a right-back, right-sided defender.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's overlooked because he rarely scores a goal. He did score one screamer this season against Leicester, if you remember that. In the cup, but he doesn't score goals. Defenders always struggle to stand out. It's usually physical types or dominant types. He's not a dominant type. He's a type who reads the game brilliantly. That's why he applies himself to any position. And I think he's also a great passer of the ball as well.
He's made more passes as a defender than anybody else in the Premier League.
Yeah, he does great long and short passes as well. One assist that stood out for me this season was a deep cross to Diego Costa away to Crystal Palace around Christmas time. And that was like a match-winning assist. It was a beautiful deep cross. Mm. And that's why he's so good in that three-man defence. He wouldn't be a centre-back in a two-man defence because he can't step out and provide those moments that he does.
But then maybe pressing him in Courtois, besides the height, could be another way of buckling the system. And with Spurs, they've got those players to do that. But we're going to move on now to the other FA Cup semi-final. Arsenal versus Manchester City. Two potentially brilliant attacks. with very leaky defences. Should either side just go for it, just try and outscore the other? Or, you know, the goal rush is going to be inevitable, isn't it, Naz?
I think Man City will be confident they can win. They were brilliant against brilliant at the Emirates, and they should have won that game, the 2-2. So I think that Pep will be like, we'll just play our way, and we'll try and outplay. It might be down to, you know, Wenger's the more interesting one because he went 3 at the back recently, didn't he?
We actually had a question on that from Sir Harvey Cruz on Twitter. Can Arsenal really carry on with the 3-4-2-1 into next season, or let's say into this match? And should, well, we'll come on to the next part of the question later, but should they line up in this back three again against Manchester City?
Absolutely not.
You're
asking to get slewed. You're asking to get slaughtered. Mm. You were trying to play an unfamiliar system in a must-win game.
They weren't soaked in the system.
They are not soaked in the system. Wenger doing 3 at the back was a weird desperation toss. Do not do 3 at the back against Manchester City. Sane will slaughter you.
It's probably true. The second part of the question was, should Liverpool try it? We're going to come on to Liverpool a little bit later on. Everybody else in the top 6 has given it a go. Should Klopp be giving this system a go as well?
Well, Brendan Rodgers didn't he? I think he was one of the most recent ones. Pellegrini loved it. Well, I think that they don't trust their defenders. They want as few defenders on the pitch as possible. So a 4-man defence for Liverpool is the ideal scenario. They don't want five defensive players on.
But they could move Henry Chan back there again, couldn't they?
Don't do that.
What would a win in the FA Cup mean for Wenger, if anything? Obviously, people are waiting to see his opportunity to say, I'm going to leave or I'm going to sign a new contract. How would a win affect this?
I don't even think Wenger necessarily needs to win. I think he just needs a nice loss. I really... Oh,
kind of what he was lacking against Bayern, wasn't it? I was really expecting them to kind of go out with like a valiant, a narrow win at home, but loss overall in aggregate. But it just completely backfired on
him. Do you get extra time in the semi-finals now in Wembley?
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if it was 2-2 and went to extra time, Wenger will get his new contract. Mm. And that's not an indictment on XYZ. It's more an indictment on the Arsenal owners and what they expect from the football team, because they're like, the machine is winning and the machine is working, the machine is getting us money. Right. Wenger's getting that new contract.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm really sorry, mate.
According to some sources, he's already signed it.
He's just waiting for a nice game to do it. Like a win will get Wenger that new contract. A good loss will probably get Wenger that new contract, which is why Manchester City have to blow them off the field.
For the sake of Arsenal.
For the sake of all of us. I've been on so many podcasts and spoken about Wenger. I'm tired. You're tired.
You're as tired as Iniesta was against...
There's enough Arsenal fans doing grime remixes about Wenger. I've seen enough. It needs to end.
Fair enough. Well, that's the FA Cup. I mean, who are we expecting to progress out of those two ties?
I can't even pick the first one, but the second one, I could so easily pick City. But I can't go with Tottenham. But
it's
I
too
do
close
think
to call.
It's so
too close.
Close.
To call.
Yeah, could be penalties, and that would probably be the best way for Chelsea because of Spurs' mentality is always under question, isn't it?
Well, Naz can't pick it apart. What do you reckon, Cole?
Heart says North London Derby final. My head says My head says Chelsea Man City.
Wow.
Probably.
I think I'd like a North London Derby final as well. Yeah. That'd be fantastic. Speaking of derbies, El Clasico is this weekend as well. We're going to quickly fly through this. Real Madrid take on Barcelona. Real leading the league through to the last four of the Champions League. Barcelona out of the Champions League and behind their rivals in the standings. We've had a question from Barca Fan TV's Carlos.
Barca Fan TV.
Zalavazar.
Thought that was a joke on Twitter.
It's not. It's new. It's coming.
Pleasure to meet you.
Pleasure to meet you. What must Luis Enrique's successor, because he is going to leave, do at Barcelona to take them back to the top in the future? He says that the squad is nowhere near the level of the one Pep or Tito Villanova left behind, especially with key players aging, as we discussed with Iniesta and Busquets. Should they be going long-term and look to the academy again, as they did before, or buy big names for short-term success, a little bit like they've been trying recently? What do you reckon, Naz?
Well, I know from a colleague of mine who covers Barcelona, he says that the contracts of Messi, Suarez and Neymar are crippling the club in terms of new signings.
Yeah.
Financially, they are ridiculously huge. And there's huge politics around all that. So they are really limited, and they're going to have to buy smart. They're going to have to buy cheap. People like Sead Kolasinac might be somebody they could look at, and left back is an issue for them. I think that they're not going to be able to buy their way out of trouble. No.
Mm. But on the pitch this weekend, what do they need to do to get a result against Real Madrid?
Pray. Right. Zidane will take a draw here and you need to, like, Barca fans need to pray.
Neymar's out, isn't he?
Yeah, like, this is this is it. Yeah. This can be the end of this. But, well, no, I'm not going to say can be the end of this Barcelona era, because you've still got Messi and you've still got Neymar.
Yeah.
But this can be dangerous.
Don't give away set pieces is massive, obviously.
Yeah.
Oh, every single game like this, it's massive. Yeah. They've got some of the best aerial players that around. Like Ramos is unreal. Just the way he attacks the ball. Yeah. Yeah. So I think they're the sort of keys, really. Yeah.
Especially Casemiro getting away with fouls so well. He's doing a bit of a Darren Fletcher on people, isn't he?
Doing a bit of a Darren Fletcher.
The Brazilian Darren Fletcher. On that note,
we have a lot of fun on this podcast.
We're going to fly through the Premier League. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I mean, we haven't got much time, so we're just going to literally note the games. Anything you want to talk about, pop your head up and have a chat. Hull City take on Watford on Saturday. Swansea City take on Stoke City. West Ham take
on
Everton.
Must win for Swansea. Must win for Swansea.
Mm. Do you think it's a case of if Hull win, it's almost like a reverse title race, isn't it? Like it's just they're head to head now.
It's great. It's a fascinating thing. I want both of them to stay up, but they can't. I think. Right. Swansea need to stay in the Premier League more than Hull do. I think Hull look like they're more likely to keep on to Marcus Silver, and Silver and Hull in the Championship will look better than Swansea in the Championship. Mm. So that's why it's more a must-win game for Swansea.
Yeah, and Swansea, obviously, it's about form as well. The players, the great, even like watching Sigurdsson and Llorente, players I think are absolutely brilliant for that sort of level of club. They're just so disappointing. It's almost sad watching it. Yeah, I just feel there's just a wave of sadness comes over me. I really like Tom Carroll, the Spurs loanee. He's so exciting to watch.
Clement's made some good signings. He's done some good work, but he's just slipped again, hasn't it?
It's almost like the social side of football, you know, the way you manage your players emotionally seems to be like a sadness around the club, and it's just upsetting. Whereas like Hull, there's no expectation of survival. Yeah. I was like, they're nailed on to go down, and for some reason all season they've not been nailed on to go down. There's always been hope there. Mm.
They kind of need West Ham to bottle it, and then both can stay up, don't they?
Yeah,
really?
I don't think. I think it's just two. It's just about them two.
It's a straight shootout.
Yeah. So I mean, West Ham are going to host Everton at London Stadium. That actually could be quite a good match for those wanting to watch a bit of Premier League action on Saturday.
My friends, go put Lukaku into your fantasy football team. He always scores against West Ham. It's do it now. It's triple captain him. He does this every single time. He scores against West Ham more than Podolski does.
Yeah, didn't know that.
probably a bit less of a spectacle is Bournemouth versus Middlesbrough. Could be a low key hit. Probably not. On Sunday, Burnley hosts Manchester United.
1-1 draw.
1-1 draw. Tom Heaton doing the magic again. And Liverpool hosts Crystal Palace, which is probably, out of all of them, that's probably the kind of the blue ticket fixture in the Premier League this weekend. Although obviously Sacco on loan at Liverpool on loan at Crystal Palace from Liverpool, he's not going to be able to play. So it's probably going to be
the Christian Benteke derby.
That's actually helped Liverpool because they've got loads of injuries as well.
I mean, Sadio Mane missing. By having the other side's best defender out, probably going to help them.
I think Liverpool should win that. Man United are just trying to hang in there with a win over Burnley.
Very quickly, we've got a final few questions on the podcast from some of our many followers on Twitter. David Borland asks, Who do the panel think are the most underrated talents in world football right now? He mentioned guys like Adrian Rabiot. Who are the players that when you think, oh, he doesn't get enough love?
Right.
Who'd you go for?
People will know I detest the word underrated and I detest the word overrated because they're nothing terms. The moment you mention a player, they become
this
rated.
This is a podcast in itself. I just want names. Mate.
Like,
come on,
no.
who do you like? Who's leapt out?
I refuse to answer this question because I hate the word underrated.
I'll answer it. Dembele from Tottenham, obviously. He's rated because Pochettino talks about him all the time.
Underrated is a terrible term.
I would say Christian Eriksen, though.
No, he's not. He's not underrated. No? He's one of the best young players in Europe. Everyone knows this.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not going to lie. For listeners that aren't aware of our usual work, we sound like we're just pretending we can't think of anyone. So you know,
I just really detest the word underrated. Like if you want to talk about players,
David, I'm really sorry, but we can't answer this question fully. look,
Wanyama doesn't get enough plaudits for being one of the transfer signings in the season, and I don't think it's Shakespeare at Leicester. I think it's Ndidi. If you want to answer that question, underrated is a terrible term for football, and don't use it.
Rather than underrated, underplayed, and Asensio has looked very good when he's playing for Real Madrid, David. Yes. So if you want one name, there's one name. You're going to move on now to Charlie Carmichael, who's asked, how best to integrate academy talent into the professional game? Do we need Premier League B teams in the Football League? Do we need the loan system to be expanded? Do we need rule changes to include more youth players in teams as well, like quota systems and stuff like that? There seems to be a different mentality in England. I mean, you think you can't touch that earlier.
I hate
the
first two ideas because club football, clubs are about football in this country, is about tradition, and all the small clubs deserve to be competing. Like, B teams are just so soulless. You'll damage the lower leagues badly in terms of audience and all that. For me, quotas could work, but I think that just young players need to be encouraged to go abroad, to go to teams that are less fashionable, like players like Tammy Abraham. Maybe he should consider a transfer to Everton. Maybe he shouldn't just wait around and hope that he's the one out of all the youngsters who failed at Chelsea. He's the one that is going to become like Harry Kane. Maybe it shouldn't be. Maybe the youngsters should be more willing to jump ship from big clubs, and there needs to be some way of encouraging that, I think.
I think you've got to force it. You can't give them an option. B teams, you got to bring in B teams. I'm really sorry.
You're a B team man.
I'm a B team man. I think, look, the Football League in itself is too long. Like, the Championship has too many teams in it. All the Football League should be 20 teams long, because rather than turn things into like a competition of who's best, you've basically turned every league into a war of attrition as to who stays fit longest.
pretty radical.
Yeah, 20, like, change the Football League so it's 20 teams per league. And stick some B teams in there.
But wouldn't, I mean, it's the big word hanging over us all. Do we have to do anything? Isn't Brexit just going to make all this, like, make the premium for young talent in England just go higher? And we're just going to naturally have more homegrown players?
Well, in a perfect world, yes, but Brexit's happening, so we don't live in a perfect world, do we?
Beardy on Twitter, great name, also asks, would the English national team benefit if the Premier League lost its best league in the world title and clubs were forced to maybe be a bit more humble and look?
Who gave the best league in the world title to the Premier League?
The Premier League.
Exactly. It doesn't mean anything. We're not the best league in the world.
But you look at the Bundesliga, they had a massive...
It's a nothing term.
But the Bundesliga had a massive financial crash and had to start looking close to home for talent, and that's pretty much why the German team have got much better over the last decade or so.
Yeah, but also in England...
Do we need to crash to get better?
You need money. Basically, look, if the English...
But the Bundesliga had less money, and that's how they got
better. If the English team wants to get better, first things first, you start dumping more money to St. George's. Mm. You drive a pickup truck full of money to Arsene Wenger, Pep Guardiola's house, and go, you two, sort out English football. Mm. And you do a root and branch system. You tell all these housing lords to basically stop building houses on the green grass in every single area. You go down to South London.
We haven't got enough houses, Carl.
You go to South London. You see where all these kids are playing street football, like Dele Alli and Jack Grealish. And you tell those guys, right, I want you to play more street football. Mm. You build concrete pitches in inner cities and you keep all the green spaces. That's what you do.
Yeah, but also in English football, we have fewer coaches than Spain and Germany have. So there's an investment at the club level, top club level, and academies have great facilities, but do we have great facilities in sports in this country in general?
Absolutely not.
There's a lot of volunteering.
Stop making it a choice between this and that and that. If you want football to be the best, if you want England to be one of the best countries in the world at football, you spend enough money and you make it easy for talented people to be good at
this
football.
This kind of feels like it could be a podcast in itself. So I'm very, very, very sorry.
It's a political issue.
It really is.
Charlie, but we'll have to come back to this another day to a bit more in depth. We've got another Charlie Cassan, who asks, how do Celtic fans feel about walking the Premier League the Premiership every year in Scotland? Must get seriously boring. What can be done to make it more competitive? Obviously, the Scottish Cup semi-final against Rangers is on Sunday. This is just a bit of a mischievous question, Carl.
How do Celtic fans feel about walking the SPL every season? Mm. Probably quite happy.
It's
a trophy, mate.
They've still got a few titles to catch up on Rangers as well, haven't they?
It's a trophy. Enjoy it. What can you do to increase Scottish football? Look, bear in mind what? Scotland's a nation of 3.5 million people and they've got four professional football leagues. Mm. They've got so many teams.
I think you're saying, how do you improve the fan experience for Celtic? I think you might be suggesting maybe join the Premier League, join another league. What do you reckon to that?
Why? What for?
I think it'd be good for Celtic, but it'd be bad for Scottish football. Mm. So it depends what you care about. But it is ridiculous. It is boring, obviously. From an outsider point of view, the league's unsellable because... It's more and more dominant every year.
Mm.
Yeah, so I think that is boring, but yeah, Celtic fans, no problem for them.
Sorry, Scottish football. Nathan of a great tactics blog, Talking Tottenham Tactics, asks, should the opinions of players who don't watch much football, they just play it, they have time to watch football when they're on the pitch, obviously, carry as much weight as they do? He's not very happy with the PFA player, the season team, basically. He doesn't think that the players have seen as much football as maybe some of us who don't play the game have done. Well, I mean, it's a fair point. If you're playing the game on Saturday, you're not going to be watching Saturday games, are you? So should we be letting them vote on their team of the season?
Right, there's a really famous quote about when they asked Saatchi about how he's not a player, so how can he be a good manager? And he said, I didn't realise...
Yeah, I'd be a horse to be a great jockey.
There you are. Yeah. That was a great quote. Look, the PFA know, like the PFA players vote. It's a nice marketing term. If you're sorry the player you wanted in your PFA team didn't make it.
But is it based on quality or is it based on personality? Are people just mates with Gary Cahill? How did he get in?
Well, Gary Cahill's had a great season. He scored goals. He's been part of one of the best defences in the league. Why can't he be in there?
I've been in many Twitter arguments about this. And I'm thinking people are taking it way too seriously for one. It's just some players' thoughts. And obviously a lot of people have personal relationships with the players involved. So more English players get in probably than deserve
to. Why does it matter?
Who cares?
Do you remember who was in the PFA team last season, mate?
No.
I
definitely don't.
No, but I did a week after it was announced when I got into big arguments on Twitter.
See? You remember last year's one now, so don't worry about it.
Obviously, Aspilicueta deserves to be in it, but he probably got loads of votes and missed out by one or two votes, so it doesn't really matter, and it's up for debate. And footballers are maybe not the most intelligent people, but they know football. They played against these guys, you know. Mm. I watch certain games. I put David Silva in my team the year because every time I watch Man City, he's brilliant. Yeah. But then loads of people are saying that's a stupid choice.
So Aspilicueta's going to console himself with the Premier League medal. It's calm.
So in some ways, the answer to the question as it is on the podcast many times is maybe, which is wonderful.
It should be the players who don't watch that much football carry as much weight as they do. Yes, because they're soaked in the system, mate.
We could do a fans team of the year if you want, and we'll just have Arsenal players and a couple of Liverpool.
There should be a fans one, there should be a writers one. Also, you should scrap the young player of the year in place with rookie of the year.
Oh, mate, again, more tangents than we can get for the time. Very last question. Andre Thomas put this question to me on Twitter, actually, not to the podcast, but he said put it on the pod anyway. Scenario time. Would you give the player of the year award to a keeper who has 38 clean sheets or a striker who has 38 goals?
The keeper has 38 clean sheets because he's probably won the title.
I love this question. That's hilarious. 38 clean sheets all day long. That'd
I guess that,
mad,
hints
wouldn't
a,
it?
That hints a consistency that isn't there with the striker, because the striker would have scored hat-tricks and then some games he wouldn't have scored, whereas keeper is keeping a clean sheet every single game, isn't it?
That would be memorable, that. Everyone would be saying, remember that season where De Gea just was unbeatable?
He's keeping 38 clean sheets, he's won the title and he's probably setting a points record.
The invincibles, the unconceedables, they're the ones that you want to check out. Yeah, exactly.
Somebody had a shot a goal in an empty net and the ball just hovered over there. It's just
actually
something going on.
You give player of the season to the centre-back in front of the goalkeeper that's kept 38 clean sheets.
It'll be the DM doing all the organisation.
There you go.
Andre, sorry again. The answer to that one might be maybe.
It's the keeper.
Thank you so much again for all your questions. They are always very much appreciated. We actually had one great question from Paul Van Lierop from Australia, who sent him on email to ask about data. Are there more fouls being called in the Champions League against Premier League sides than they are in the Premier League? I kind of feel like, Paul, that's such a great question. We're going to come back to it in a little bit more depth another time. So we have heard your question.
Short answer, yes, with a but.
Well, you're not the data call. That's
long
an opinion.
Answer, no,
well,
with an if.
Well, that's coming through. Paul, we might even do a piece on that. I'll keep you in the know on that one. But anyway, thank you for joining us. Naz, thanks for coming on again.
Yeah, it's been great.
It has been great. Carl, thank you for joining us.
Listen to my football podcast, Talking Tactics.
Oh, please do.
Every single Tuesday morning, drops sometimes funny, sometimes serious, always football.
It's very good as well. You're going to be in competition next week, though. We're moving our Monday podcast to Tuesday next week, unfortunately. So
controversial.
It's going to be a shootout between the two pods. But I recommend listening to both of them because they're both great.
Why not? Life's
I'm biased on one of them, but yeah, Carl's very good. Naz, anything coming up for yourself and the goal?
Yeah, I'm going to the Cup semi-final and going to be at the Southampton game on Tuesday as well for Chelsea, so doing all the Chelsea stuff. My Chelsea piece is going into detail about Conte's lack of flexibility in the season, what was once his strength before the game has become Chelsea's weakness.
So if you like to hear in this pod, basically you go into more detail right there.
Yeah, basically. Wonderful. So yeah, just go on my Facebook page, Nizar Kinsella. Nizar is an unusual name, Nizarr. I'm pretty much the only one in the world, so you'll find me.
Yeah, that's a good way to be. Well, that's all the plugs done. And I got to say, thank you again for listening. Tune in again next week. I will be back on Tuesday. I'll also be back on Friday. Nick is on holiday. See you again soon, and thanks for listening.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.